This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 263. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Splash Pages are Unchained, Bruce is a Zero, Babs in Crisis, our favorite and only Orange Lantern gets his own book, Shazam wanders to a close, and what happened to our fables? This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, June 30th, 2013. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
We didn't have a show last week, Mark.
We did not. And we actually did a 101 show
two weeks ago.
So we have 3 weeks of comics to catch up on. So let's get started with Superman Unchained, number one by Snyder and Lee. This will be a new ongoing Superman title. And they tied the first issue to the release of Man of Steel, the movie.
Was it supposed to be content related at all to that?
Not really.
Okay.
Just synergy. And you can check out my blog for details on the movie. But meanwhile, we're in Nagasaki, 1945, and we learn that the bomb that hit is actually a man. Very strange. And then we get a huge poster that's pasted into the story, which is very impressive, but also very difficult to read without destroying the comic. I managed to unfold it.
That was so annoying. And absolutely needless.
That's the ultimate splash page for Jim Lee, is what that was. Clark saves this space station from crashing, and at one point he manages to go from X-ray to gamma vision. That's new. But we learn it's not the only thing that's falling. All these other objects are falling. So he suspects Luthor, but Luthor says he's building this solar tower.
But he's supposed to be in prison as well.
Right.
It's weird.
And Lois is working on the Daily Planet layout, Minority Report style, with all these glowing things in front of her, and she's moving them around. And she's probably not breathing because she has a skin-tight dress on. We learn that something else fell into the ocean, and so he goes to check it out, and he's attacked under the ocean. And we learn that there's a secret base under the sea, and another being who worked for the bad guys or the government or whoever this organization is under the sea since World War II. And he's the guy from the beginning of the issue. He's the guy that actually generated what we thought was the atomic bombing of Nagasaki.
Oh, is that? Okay, I didn't get that.
Right. And then there's an epilogue where this man with no eyes is found by a fishing vessel who needs desperately to find Lois Lane. It's very impressive artwork, as always you would expect from Jim Lee. It's overdone, but that's what he does. And Snyder is throwing out a lot of ideas here.
Okay, I had a couple things in this one. First of all, Lois is doing the newspaper, and she's talking to Clark about an article that he wrote.
Yes.
While Perry is there. Mm-hmm. Is Clark working for the paper?
See, it's the question is whether this fits into the mainline continuity or not. Or this is going to be kind of on the side continuity. Because in the main continuity, of course, Clark is now a blogger. He's no longer working for the Daily Planet.
Right.
So,
but I thought even in this issue, somewhere it inferred that he was a blogger and not working for the newspaper anymore. But then he was talking to Lois.
Yeah.
It really confused me. And then the whole thing about letting Luthor, this guy who has been shown that he's determined to get rid of Superman and possibly doesn't care how many people he kills to do it, but let's let him build a new tower in Metropolis.
Because that'll go perfectly. I don't see any downside to that.
What is the deal with that?
Because people in Metropolis are stupid.
Apparently.
Well, apparently they're all stupid enough not to figure out that the guy behind the glasses is Superman, so
Yeah. Well, did you read there was an interesting article somewhere about the idea that perhaps Superman just surrounds himself by people with face blindness and that's why they don't recognize him?
No. And that reminded me, there was a Silver Age story in the late Silver, actually from like Bronze Age story, where they finally explained why nobody figures it out. Superman unconsciously uses super hypnotism on everybody he's around to make them think he's smaller than he thinks he is.
Well, it's got to be something like that.
Yeah. I did notice one other thing, and I had to go back a couple of weeks to find out that this is brand new. In the credit info, in the title sequence, it now says, by special arrangement with the Jerry Siegel family, and that's in every title where Superman is in it. And it's apparently based on a new legal ruling from the 2001 order. They've made a ruling that apparently just happened that now says they have to include that.
Boy, that's spitting in the face of Schuster, isn't it?
Well, it says, by Jerry Siegel and Joe Schuster, by special arrangement with the Jerry Siegel family.
Oh, okay.
So you're going to see that very wordy meaning going forward. Pretty soon you're going to need a EULA to read comics. Batman number 21 by Snyder and Capullo. Zero Year begins in this. And it was kind of annoying to me that they couldn't give Superman his own week. This came out the same week as Superman Unchained.
Oh, okay. I didn't know since I read everything in one week.
Right. We learned that some bad guy, quote, killed the city 6 years ago and Gotham looks to be abandoned and Bruce has kind of gone Mad Max. And how is this part of his origin? Because it infers that he's been there for a while and everybody knows who he is. But this is supposed to be Zero Year.
Yeah, that didn't seem to make much sense either.
So then we go back a few months before that, and now we're in an origin story. Fighting Red Hood, and Bruce Wayne is officially dead, and Alfred is trying to talk him out of being a hero, as you would expect. And Bruce's Uncle Philip shows up.
Is this a character that you know of?
As far as I know, brand new.
Okay.
Tries to talk Bruce into taking back over leadership of the company. And we see the origin of the Giant Penny.
Giant Penny!
Which is in front of Wayne Enterprises. It's just a sculpture in front of Wayne Enterprises. In a later scene, Uncle Philip is being blackmailed by Edward Nigma, who may or may not be working for Wayne Enterprises, into killing Bruce.
Or he may actually be the mastermind behind the Wayne Enterprises Kane Chemicals merger / reburgeoning company.
Right. We then get a flashback to a young Bruce and Thomas Wayne, and Dad is working on cars and shows Bruce this spherical camera. It's like a big sphere, and it can see 360 degrees in all directions. And Bruce later takes it to check out this hole at Wayne Manor, which is, of course, where he's going to discover the cave. And then there's this backup story about how Bruce learned to drive.
Or how he learned to drive like Batman.
Yeah. It's intriguing, and we'll see how Snyder tries to reset this origin story and what he actually changes in the continuity again.
Yeah, but it still seems like Batman's going to have a really hard time fitting into the new 52 continuity.
Right. It still doesn't make much sense. Batman and Batgirl, number 21, by Tomasi and Richards.
I accidentally read this one before I read the Batgirl one.
Were they in order?
Well, Batgirl had removed her bat symbol.
Oh, okay. I see.
And that confused me.
Okay.
And I didn't know why, much as Bruce didn't know why.
Right. Bruce is continuing to deal with Damian's death, which is why they keep doing these one-shot stories in here with various members of the Bat family. And Barbara is dealing with James Jr.'s death and whether she killed him or not, and she's not clear. And, of course, it's unclear whether he actually died.
Yeah, he didn't.
He didn't, I'm sure. So she reaches out to him just to talk about it, but he's still on his vendetta and seems to have this death wish. And so she sees Bruce toss Detective Bullock across a room at one point, screaming at him, "Don't ever touch me, Bullock." She finally decides just to come to the cave, and they have the whole thing out. And at one point, she smashes Robin's display. You know, the infamous, here's this glass case with the various Robin's costumes in it. as you mentioned, she had already removed the bat symbol from her costume because she's not sure if she can keep being the hero.
And that was because of her brother and not because of Bruce.
Right, but Bruce thinks it's because of him. He orders her to leave the cave, and he's just doing a great job burning bridges wherever he goes.
Yes. I feel bad for poor Babs. Of course, I still liked her better as Oracle.
Yeah, well. Larfleeze, number one by Giffen and DeMatteis. Finally, a lighter title from DC, thank goodness. All this doom and gloom going on in the rest of the titles. And this is classic Giffen. You have a pompous hero who's making up his own origin story as he goes along, not quite a truthful version of the story. And a sarcastic lackey keeps poking the hero. And they're at what was called the creation point, where they're going to drift into this cosmic nexus and be destroyed. And the orange ring is about to run out of power. We already know that Larfleeze lost his lantern in the previous backup story they were doing in one of the Green Lantern titles. No, actually it wasn't. It was in Threshold.
Threshold, yeah.
Larfleeze just wants to talk. Actually, he just wants to make a speech. And we learn that somehow he's become his own battery. So he doesn't need a separate battery anymore. That's convenient. And they're attacked by this giant astral wolf who eats our hero, who then blows the wolf up from the inside. And the Lord of the Haunt shows up, this other astral being. And Larfleeze just sees a bunch of stuff he can grab and take.
Yes. I kind of like this one as well.
Yeah.
Although I'm a little sad that they never came out with the Angry Cat comic.
Right. Justice League number 21 by Johns and Frank. So the whole issue wraps up the Shazam story, which until now has been a backup.
Yeah, where was the Justice League in this one?
Well, I think this is another thing they're doing in order to align all the three Justice League titles for Trinity War. They had to finish up that story. And in fact, all three Justice League titles came out this week at all at once. So they're now all aligned in terms of publishing. Trinity War is imminent. Billy shares his power with his friends in order to stop Black Adam, which becomes kind of a flashpoint callback. There were multiple Captain Marvels. There were like six of them. And here there are six of them here. So it almost seems like they're calling back to that. Unfortunately, it doesn't last because Billy takes the powers back. There's also an appearance by Talkie Tawny and Mr. Worm, one of the goofiest villains.
Yes.
It's this space worm who's telepathic and can get in your ear and then make you do things. Billy shames Adam into quitting because Adam still thinks he's a hero, or at least believes he is. So now all the players have been introduced and we can move forward.
Yay!
In a storyline that should have been done about 6 months ago, because that clearly at one point they were just vamping in the backup story. And now they had to rush through to the end here. Unwritten number 50 by Carey, Gross, Willingham, and Buckingham. So the Fables crossover begins. And apparently it's not truly a crossover in that it doesn't appear it's going to affect what's going on in Fables, in the Fables title. Because this is a different Fables. It's a different continuity for Fables, really.
Or it's Fables was changed. Mm-hmm. By what's going on in the story world.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you're not going to see what's going on in here, apparently, in the Fables title.
Okay.
So it's not reciprocal.
Okay.
So in this version of the Fables continuity, Mr. Dark won the war. Snow is his consort. Bigby is alive, but a prisoner. And we see various goddesses pleading for Mr. Dark's mercy. But he says, well, the cubs, Snow's children, need somewhere to play, so they're going to go into your universes.
Yeah, we're not going to agree not to invade you. Sorry.
Sorry. And again, this is all apparently part of the Leviathan effect, because Leviathan is dying, and it's somehow infected Fables to go this dark. So the remaining Fables are on the run. And the witches of Fables are trying to conjure up an uber wizard to fight Mr. Dark, and they end up getting Tommy. Totenkinder realizes what has to be done, and so she conjures up Tommy's friends from the book, from the Tommy Taylor books. And Tommy's turned back into a kid. So now you have the fictional versions of Tommy and Lizzie and the other.
But it's Sue Sparrow.
Right.
And
I don't remember the boy's name, yeah. The other boy's name.
Yeah. But
Ron.
But did you also notice that the vampire who's Tommy's friend
mm-hmm.
was one of the flying vampires going in to attack the.
Exactly. Dark's forces are stopped by these kid wizards for now. And apparently Dark might bring Boy Blue's corpse into the play.
Yes.
Oh, this is a much darker version of Fables than we've seen before.
Yes. I kind of liked it.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Mirror Mirror Star Trek universe
exactly.
version of Fables.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Where everything that could have gone wrong did.
I thought it was interesting that there was no Mrs. Spratt in this one. You know, who he had.
That's true. Well, he didn't need her because he ended up winning. Maybe she was around, but he just killed her.
Yeah. But I just wondered if she knew that he would have ditched her for Snow, would he have?
Right.
Would she have gone along with it?
Right.
I don't know.
Before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Mark, we're playing with last week's issue because this week's issue is a double issue. So
we'll
I'm going to save it for next week.
Makes sense.
Okay. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Go.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
Yes.
A movie that's already out?
No.
A movie that's coming out?
Yes.
A single movie?
Yes.
Is there one person on the cover?
No.
Two?
Yes.
Man and a woman?
Yes.
Okay. Movie that's coming out, man and a woman, is it genre related?
Yes.
Is it superhero related?
No.
Is it supernatural related?
No.
Is it science fiction related?
Yes.
Science fiction-y. And it's a movie coming out with a man and a woman. And is it coming out this summer?
I think this fall or holiday season.
Okay, so later. All right. Is it a sequel?
No.
Okay. Is it... It's not based on a comic book?
No.
Is it based on a book?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Are the two people on the cover under 30?
Yes.
Under 20?
Most likely on the verge.
Okay.
But definitely playing under 20.
Is it the Hunger Games sequel?
No.
Oh. Okay. Is it related to that?
Only very tangentially.
Very tangentially. Ah. I'd ask if is it something I've actually heard of.
No, it's not.
Okay. I was going to say you wouldn't know, but apparently I don't know what it is.
I'm pretty sure you've never heard of this.
Is it vampire related?
No.
Okay. Is it monster related?
No.
Is it...
You only have 9 seconds left to run out the clock
here,
Mark.
Let's see. Wow.
You probably never even heard of the two people, so I'm not even trying to make you guess. Okay, this is funny. It is. The two people are Shailene Woodley and Theo James.
Okay.
That you have no idea who they are.
No clue.
The movie is Divergent, which is based on a young adult novel that's post-apocalyptic, blah, 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 next Hunger Games.
Oh, so it's basically a Hunger Games knockoff.
Yes. And I knew you wouldn't get it, but I made you play anyways. So there. I got at least, when I played with Kate this week,
yeah.
I at least got Divergent out of it. So.
Oh, well. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.